news, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
.806 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Governor Kay Ivey, State of the State last night. We'll get right into that with a local man most of you know very well, Pete Ream. Will be talking with us about what's coming up today. First, I'm going to play you some audio from Ivey last night. Poked a little fun at herself, but then we'll get to the serious stuff here.
In Alabama, we don't exactly follow the rule of never asking a lady her age, and that's okay. So while we're on my age, I will share one of its many benefits. Meemaw will tell you exactly like it is.
So lots of giggles and good times in that 30-minute speech last night. But today, and for many people, it's been long before today, things turn serious with bills that are in the works. And we'll get to Pete Ream here, but I want to play what we're going to talk about with Pete, and that is the vote coming up today on the state's Veterans Board.
We will also restructure our board so that our veterans of all eras across every military branch are best represented. The goal is to have a board that is a team player within the executive branch and can fiercely and effectively advocate for the unique needs of veterans in every generation and their families. Our veterans are not only part of the fabric of our great nation, they're our fellow Alabamians.
So that's Governor Kay Ivey talking about an issue that is very important to many veterans in our state, and one of those veterans on the line with us, our friend Pete Ream. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning, Dan and Dalton. Thanks for letting me come on.
You got it, Pete. I'll say what the governor had to say last night. You and many veterans, I guess, not to put words in your mouth, but simply you would beg to differ, correct?
Oh, yes. We absolutely beg to differ. Let me see if I can put this delicately. The governor's a liar. The governor is a deceiver. And the governor telling us that she wants to make the State Board of Veterans Affairs more effective in serving veterans and giving us a voice is an absolute lie. She is trying to silence us. When she says team player, what she's talking about is she wants a political crony that will keep his mouth shut when we witness incompetence and corruption, and as they do the kickbacks. And that's what's so disgusting about all your happy people in Montgomery last night. And this is kind of like what we're seeing in Washington. And everybody in Alabama should be incensed. This isn't about veterans. They're all up there joking about Meemaw and everything. And they all know about the depth of corruption in this state. Because we're not unlike the federal government. We spend all sorts of money in all sorts of areas, and we get little or nothing for it. But they're all smiling, oh, we're all Republicans and we're all conservative and we're doing the right thing. And they are all turning a blind eye to the massive corruption in this state and waste of money. And that's why they're silencing the veterans. And that's why they are trying to push this bill through the Senate committee this morning, is before we can get up there and fight against it. That's why the first day, oh, we're going to run through and put this. It's a total fabrication, and it's a bold-faced lie to say, oh, we want a team player and we want to give them a voice. No. For 80 years, veterans around the state have had a voice in Montgomery. Veterans have hired and fired their own commissioner, but it was the Governor Ivey who mistreated that commissioner, didn't give him any due respect or assistance. And when he stood up, that's Admiral Davis, and said, hey, those things are wrong. I think we need to look into these things. You know, he was sort of like the Elon Musk of Alabama. And they said, oh no, he's got to go. And we got to make sure we silence it. And that's why I think veterans are going to be angry with Governor Meemaw. But they should be angry with all of the state representatives and senators, because they're all sitting there on their hands knowing that Ivey's bill and those yahoos who proposed it is nothing but a scheme to drag the veterans into the darkness of their corruption.
Pete, so this bill, and you said it, a rush job here, 10:30 this morning, room 807 at the State House for the Senate Veterans and Military Affairs Committee. And how long, I guess, has this been known that they were going to get to this basically first thing? We're covering a lot here that's going on in the legislature, so it may have been out there. I didn't realize this would be like item number one, basically.
Well, I don't think any of us did either. We heard rumblings that they were going to propose a bill, and there's been a lot of talk around the state that we need to be prepared for it. But, you know, shame on us. And I'm sitting here thinking I should have known that this is what they were going to do. But this is very telling. They have a complete major overhaul of how the State Veterans Administration works. Complete overhaul. Did any of the veterans get consulted? Right? Mm-hmm. Did we get any heads up? Did all of our state senators and representatives call us and say, hey, we want to talk to you about this. We want your input on this. No. They got their few selected little cronies, and they got a few people that they've duped and exploited to put a couple of veterans on there, one of them from Huntsville that, you know, they said, look, you go along with this. We'll give you the commissioner job when we get this done.
Right.
But they didn't tell us, oh, this is first up. No, this is pretty transparent. Oh, we're going to put this up there, slam it through, it'll be done. Well, we're mobilizing. I mean, I found out last night I'd be there this morning if I knew, but this is how they play it. They know that we have lives, we have jobs, we have families, and we can't pay attention to their sausage-making constantly. And that's why this is first up, because they know this is really unpopular, and they know that we will get on buses, and they know that we will come, and they want to get it through, because they know once they get it through, it'll all die down and everybody forget. And then years from now, you'll be doing shows about why do veterans not get their care? There's all these good things that were happening for veterans, and they all stopped. And it all go to this moment.
Pete, I was going to ask a question about veterans watching this vote and keeping receipts on the vote. But I guess what you're saying is elected officials have already, in effect, let veterans down, in your opinion, right?
Yes. Yes, they have. Because they've let this be put on there, and they're rushing it through the committee, and we didn't. Did any of the and I'm they're all friends of mine. God bless them all. But did they all reach out and say, "Hey guys, you better be ready because they're going to jam this through the first day of the session"? Mm-hmm. Did they call and say, "Hey, let's meet and get your input"? No, they all know. Well, Mamaw's going to try to cut their legs off the first morning. I hope it's quick before Pete can get to the text line.
Yeah, and it's a bipartisan bill here, and you mentioned it, that this will make it so that the governor will be able to appoint the person that will basically lead the board.
And in the past, the board did that themselves.
And I know last night when she was speaking, she said, we will have great representation of veterans across the state. But, you know, talking with many veterans here locally, they seem to be pretty pleased with the way the board was run before all of this and felt that there was already pretty good representation for, you know, I think, weren't they in the board initially, you had like at least one disabled vet. You had basically a veteran from kind of each pot, if that makes sense. Somebody to represent someone throughout the state. And Ivy's acting now like, oh, now you'll get accurate representation now that this is going through. I mentioned it's a bipartisan bill. I don't hear anyone on the right saying we need to look into whether that was even a legal move to use her supreme executive power to have him removed.
That's what's got everybody upset. This is basically what we have determined, or what we're learning, that we've learned in Washington, is that we have a bunch of Romneys and McConnells up there. Okay? They're like, oh yeah, we're red, we're Republican, but when the real stuff comes up, they don't say anything about it. They've been quiet about it. They're turning a blind eye. And what you're saying is, after World War II, the World War II generation put in place the current system. So it's been working for over 80 years. And there is a representation. All the veteran service organizations across the state, there's a formula based on, I can't remember the exact numbers, but however many members you have across the state, you get so many seats. Mm-hmm. So, like, the VFW has, I think, three seats. The American Legion, I think, has three or four seats. Disabled veterans have a seat. The Military Officers Association of America has two seats. It goes on and on. There's all these different orgs. So there's about 15 and veterans represented. And these representatives are nominated by each of those groups. The governor has to approve them, but they're nominated by their groups. Mm-hmm. And they come back and they report to us
and
what's going on. So we have a voice. We've had a voice.
And that board, obviously, were very pleased with how Admiral Davis was running the show.
Yeah, I mean, like he was saying, Pete's saying, it's been going on, it's been run for 80 years. But the thing that's really kind of got everybody up in arms is it's been run particularly well over the last tenure of Kent Davis.
Yes, dramatic improvement in access, in services, in veterans' homes, particularly mental health care. They've made quantum leaps, still a lot to do, but quantum leaps in mental health care, particularly for veterans, over Davis's tenure. He did great things. But what happens? Oh, he happened to notice that we were getting crossways with the corruption over at the Alabama Department of Mental Health.
Mm-hmm.
And so governor said, you guys need to fire him. He's talking too much. And when the board disagreed with her twice, what's her solution? Does she listen to the veterans? Did she bring us to Montgomery and say, hey, I need to understand what your problem is? No. She set up to silence us, to say, oh, no, we don't really want to hear from you because y'all are not a team player with the deep corruption in Montgomery. So her solution is, we're going to get rid of you. And we're going to make sure you can't hire the commissioner. I will hire whoever I want, someone compliant.
And Pete, I want to get into what you would like to see constituents do here in just a second. But kind of one question here is, we see everything that's going on in D.C. as they try to seriously reduce the size and scope of the federal government and pass more and more of those responsibilities down to individual states. And it's not far-reaching to believe that something similar could happen with the VA nationally, where it's more of funding given to states and let them kind of try to figure it out, or however they would go about that. But we would be putting that responsibility into the hands of this same governor, who appears to have gone against the veterans' wishes on this. Do you see potential issues arising if Ivy or someone like Ivy is still in charge, if something like that were to happen?
Look around at everything. Look around at all the other federal money that we get, right? Where does it all go? Nobody really knows where it all goes. It goes to all sorts of places around the state. We spend so much money in education, you name it. And we're looking at the results going, really? Where's all this money going? How come we can't, how come Alabama has crappy roads? How come we don't have a good infrastructure plan? How come our education is still lagging and all the money you've got socked away on this? And then the short answer is yes. It'll just be more money for them to play with. And no one, it's just like the federal government, what Musk is exposing. Everybody's going, well, all that money, what are we getting? Mm-hmm. Nothing. You're getting nothing.
What would you like to see folks who are as fired up about this as you are? What do you want to see them do today?
Well, we got to mobilize. We're a lot of phone calls going around. But right now, the only thing we can do at this first moment is veterans across the state need to be letting their representative know that they have serious questions and misgivings about the governor's plan. And that they better not rush to go through this until they talk to us, get our feedback as veterans, and we have a chance to make it known. And I hate to say it, but the only way, what we're just going to have to do is get up there as quickly as possible and put everybody on notice that all you people wanting to run for re-election in 2026, the 400,000 veterans in the state of Alabama will be keeping a tally of who voted to silence us and who supported us. And we will be opposing those people in 2026.
10:30. So
that's
Montgomery.
That's the only thing they listen to.
Yeah, sure. And, take their power away. But it's a matter of mileage and time and distance. And now you're kind of down to this. I don't know what you can do.
And maybe facing a stacked deck, right?
It appears to be a stacked deck.
Yeah, no, and that is the whole idea. And shame on us, because we knew They were proposing a bill. We knew that they were going to put one out, and we were kind of talking and gearing up. Okay, we're going to make some trips to Montgomery. We're going to have some fights up there. But, okay, we should have realized. They're pretty clever. They stack the deck. They're going to try to run this through the Senate committee this morning and go, oh, look how much we've helped the veterans. Veterans are number one. That was the first screw job on the agenda for the session. To me, it's just the whole thing is sickening. Not just what they're doing to veterans. It's just that all of our representatives who are all up there telling us how MAGA they are and how much they love small government and freedom and conservative values, and they just sit there and watch the corruption go past them, and they don't have anything to say about it. They just say, why are you guys so hot-headed? The governor's just trying to help you.
Yeah, I think everybody knows that's not the case at all. Pete, thanks for joining us this morning. We'll be revisiting this tomorrow morning. We've got no choice, right, Dalton?
Right, yeah, that vote 10:30 today, they will be meeting today, Senate Veterans and Military Affairs Committee, the bill on the agenda, 10:30, room 807 at the State House. Thanks for coming on with us, Pete.
Yep, thanks.
You got it.
That's Pete Ream. It was a busy day in news yesterday. Of course, you had that, State of the State, a lot going down here in the city. And then Trump's still in office, so there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, and, you know, that lawsuit, I wonder how that, you know, where's that right now? Kent Davis suing the governor, I believe, right?
We'll have to see. I need to dive in on the specifics on that, okay. But I know there was talk of that.
823, Dan and Dalton, good morning to you. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 827. The text line is alive and well this morning. At 251-343-0106.
Yeah, we head right there. And let's see. Chris from Orange Beach said, I can't figure out how Pete feels about our governor and how the veterans are treated. Could you help me out with that? Is he in the column undecided? I do not think so, Chris. I made it pretty plainly clear how he feels.
Is your radio not working this morning, Chris?
This texture here, can you please just tell the veterans to shut up? Our representatives are not going to go against the governor. If they don't like it, move out of the state. It said move to a state that treats you better, I guess. That is sad but true. Same texter says, we all say it's not our representative, but it is. It's Fiddler. It's Elliot. They are horrible, is what this texter says. James says, wow, powerful words from Pete. Until you guys ask those questions of our representatives, I really don't see change coming.
No.
There has to be a respectful way to hold them accountable live on air so we can hear where they all stand. That question was asked, James, a lot of the representatives, basically when this story was big and in the process of going down. And really the response, and, you know, I'm trying to remember, so they may have spoken out more forcefully at one time or another, but I believe Representative Chip Brown, I think State Senator Elliott.
Who's a veteran, yep, Brown.
I don't think, well, they were certainly not as fired up as Pete was there, and I really haven't heard any legislators even mention whether Ivy had the power to do what she did by removing it from the board.
This story was like a slow moving, like you're reading a novel at night, and you're just taking your time with, because it started last spring, around April of last year, and the chapters would unfold, and there's a little twist in the story, and then finally, Davis is suddenly removed, and the final chapter may be today at 10:30.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll be the final, but it'll be a big turning point.
Yeah, we were talking about that lawsuit not yet filed by Kent Davis.
It was also a big day in the city. We'll try to get to some of that here on the way. And Milton Friedman. He could have been on Doge. I'll play some Milton Friedman audio that'll amaze you coming up here in the next segment. 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch.
Well, Donald Trump promised to run the country as a streamlined business, and keeping his word on that is driving some in the media into their own little personal frenzy. Two things there. I think they just are having trouble keeping up with it all.
Yeah.
Which is frustrating when their job is to keep up with it all. And the other thing is, when they speak to people like Chuck Schumer, they're talking about like the destruction of the government, and they're putting it that way when the fact is this is what You would think watching certain newscasts that, and they're putting the, you know, a very dim light on Trump and Musk and all that, when the fact is those newscasts are not garnering many viewers, and many of the American people are for all this.
Yeah, and, you know, just a little insight here. So the way Dan and I, kind of the way we work after several years together now, is we almost cover 24 hours a day because I stay up very late.
Yep.
I'm usually up till 11 or midnight sometimes. Dan gets up very early. So unless it happens between 12 and 3,
we're going to catch
12
it.
And 2, 12 and 3, yeah.
Well, one of us will catch it. Yeah, and you most catch everything. but we do. We work hard to try to get an idea of what's going on.
But I'll tell you, my workload over these last 2 weeks has increased exponentially, just trying to keep up with everything that's going on in D.C.
One of our biggest challenges now is to what gets on the air.
Yeah.
Because there's so much going on.
And that's the same issue that the legacy media, the national media, are having right now. As you look, you know, something that was a big story 13 hours ago is nowhere near the front page of the New York Times anymore.
Exactly.
They've moved on.
And then if you don't give it the attention that it deserves, it's gone. It's like we try and decide what we do talk about, but we try to give it the time and attention that it should garner because of how important it is. But here comes another story down the line right after that.
Yeah, and you could tell, even though Democrats publicly are pushing back, they have these protests, and I'm not talking about the ICE ones, but the ones where they're upset about the government aid being taken away and these departments being slashed left and right. They're doing a public pushback, but as far as legal pushback, we're not seeing a lot of that. You'll see that they'll file lawsuits, but that are really only a lot of these, they aren't, you know, Trump is constitutionally right in a lot of these cases, even though some of it, you know, the media is passing him off as unpopular moves, these cuts left and right. But if they were unconstitutional, they would be pushing it in court, and you would see that immediately.
And we may still see some.
Keep up with a lot of that. But, so Doge is obviously one of the hot spots right now. People are very conflicted over Doge, and I'm just fascinated with this team that Elon Musk has put together of Wunderkinds. Is that how you say it? Like 6 19 to 25 year olds who are just technological geniuses. And while Trump has said these last couple of days, we're not really letting, you know, Elon is an advisor. He advises, and we say yes or no. And it does seem like they may be trying to pull the reins back on him and Doge a little bit. But the process is just swimming along. I think it was Bloomberg I saw last night. I didn't get to dive into the story because, again, things are so, so busy right now. But they wrote, let's see, Trump. That was the Gaza Strip. I'm going through all of these one after right another. So they said the Treasury Department said Elon Musk's government efficiency team has been given read-only access to coded data. And then they're just transforming this into, you know, the cuts you're seeing today. Anyway, another man who would have really enjoyed what's going on with the Trump administration right now and the cuts that are coming is Milton Friedman, of course, like one of the most well-known economists ever, and maybe got more airtime than any other academic economist of all time. Phil Donahue had him on all the time, I guess.
Yeah, there's different. Everybody will quote Milton Friedman if they are an economist or if they're trying to explain something about the economy.
And he is, I think he described himself as more of a classical liberal, but a free market economist. I would say very, very libertarian these days. You would say that guy is as libertarian as they come, much more libertarian than even Trump, because if you listen to this interview, and this was, let's see, back in, I think, 1999 or 2000, and you had Milton Friedman, and he was being interviewed by, and I had it listed right here, it was the former speechwriter for Reagan. He was the guy who wrote the line, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." And he was interviewing Milton Friedman about which government agencies he would like to see cut. Cabinet-level agencies, that is. And there were 14 at the time. There's 15 now with the Department of Homeland Security, which was brought along just a couple years, actually, after this interview, back in 2002, after the 9/11 terrorist attack.
Okay, so this was he was pretty old at this point.
So
2002, and listen to what he's got to say.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Keep them or abolish them? Department of Agriculture.
Abolish.
Gone.
Oh, man.
Department of Commerce.
Abolish.
Gone. Department of Defense.
Keep.
Keep it. Department of Education.
Abolish.
Gone. Energy.
Abolish.
How?
Except that energy ties in with the military.
Well, then we shove it under defense.
That's
the little
right.
bit that handles the nuclear.
Right. That ought to go under
plutonium
defense.
And so forth goes under defense, but we abolish the rest of it. Health and Human Services.
There is room for some public health activities to prevent contagion. Such a thing as, for example.
So you'd keep the National Institutes of Health, say, and the Center for Disease Control down in
Atlanta?
No,
those are mostly research agencies. No, that's a question of whether the government should be involved in financing research.
And the answer is no.
Well, that's a very complicated issue, and it's not an easy answer with respect to that.
We'll eliminate half of the Department of Health and Human Services?
Like that.
Okay, one half. There we go. Housing and Urban Development?
Out.
Oh. Didn't even pause over that one. Department of the Interior.
Oh, well, but the Housing and Urban Development has done an enormous amount of harm. My God. If you think of the way in which they've destroyed parts of cities under the rubric of eliminating slums.
Jack Kemp.
You remember that Martin Anderson wrote a book on the federal bulldozer describing the effect of the urban development. There have been many more dwelling units torn down in the name of public housing that have been built.
Jack Kemp has proposed selling to the current inhabitants of public housing their unit, their townhouse, their apartment, for a dollar a piece, and just shifting the ownership to the people who live.
If you got rid of the Department of Housing and Urban Development, it would be worth doing that.
All right.
So I think we're halfway through the departments, and we've kept one so far.
Yep.
The Department of Defense.
Yep.
And parts of the Department of Health and Human Services.
You squeezed Human Services into the defense, right?
Energy was under defense.
Energy, yeah.
So this is Milton Friedman, who passed away not long after this interview, just a few years. But we'll continue. I think we're halfway through.
That's gone. Department of the Interior, your beloved National Park Service.
Well, given the problem there is, you first have to sell off all the land that the government owns. But that's what you should do.
It could be done pretty quickly.
There's no reason for the government to own. The government now owns something like one-third of all the land in the country.
And that's too much. Should go down to zero.
Should go down to, well, not entirely zero. They ought to own the land on which government buildings are.
So, see, okay. Even Friedman, right of, if you're thinking left-right, I guess, he's more of free market than Trump is. As far as the Department of the Interior, Trump wants more parkland. He he wants to kind of be a more modern-day Teddy Roosevelt and add to it and do these things. So Friedman would be cutting even more from DOGE than Trump. let's keep rolling here.
Okay, terrific. Department of Justice.
Oh, yes.
Keep that one. Labor.
No.
Gone. State.
Keep.
Keep it. Transportation.
Gone.
Gone. The Treasury?
You have to keep it to collect taxes.
All right, collect taxes through the...
By the way, he wasn't a fan of taxes.
Treasury, Veterans Affairs?
You can regard the Veteran Affairs as a way of paying essentially salaries for services of those who have been in the armed force. But you ought to be able to get rid of it.
You should be able to pay it off. Pay off lump sums, perhaps.
That's right.
And just get rid of it. From 14 departments... down to four,
its basic
four and a half,
fundamental
and
functions.
Half.
What are its fundamental functions? Preserve the peace, defend the country.
All right.
Provide a mechanism whereby individuals can adjudicate their disputes. That's the Justice Department. Protect individuals from being coerced by other individuals. The police function.
Right.
And now, this is both the central government and the state and local governments. The police function is primarily local and central.
Right.
And those are the fundamental functions of government, in my opinion.
So there you go. Thoughts on that and whether Milton Friedman would have been a big fan of DOGE?
He would have. He some of the things that he wrote and said back in the day may be influencing those today. It's not like his works weren't appreciated and understood.
Right.
So basically, what I love about what he said was it makes so much sense. And of course, it doesn't make sense when you compare it to the point that the government has grown and where we are at now and what heads fall because you want to cut back. But the department that functions fundamentally, those are the departments that stay. All the rest got to go.
Yeah, yeah, that was incredible. And I know that many of you have probably heard that, but a blast from the past there. And I found that very, very interesting. 8:45, what do you think about the Gaza thing last night? Because, you know, Dan and I were talking about that this morning. Oh, and I'm sorry, Erlene says, remind us again, what does DOGE stand for? Department of Government Efficiency is what it stands for.
Yep.
And there was a crypto coin that Elon Musk years ago basically created, Dogecoin. Long story, but that's where they used that and then made the acronym Department of Government
Efficiency. I didn't realize that. Okay.
So anyway, last night or yesterday evening, at the same time that Governor Ivey's giving her State of the State address, that's the draw, I guess, when Trump's in office, if you're trying to get the main screen as a governor.
Yeah.
So many more eyes were trained on the White House. And when he was asked about what he sees the future, what he thinks the future of Gaza should look like, Trump surprised basically everyone in the room. And I'd say that includes Netanyahu himself, because they have video of just him as Trump is announcing this. And he looks like he was so blindsided by the fact that Trump would want the United States to take over full control of Gaza. And Trump was, you texted, he basically said, let's turn this into seaside condos and Topgolf. That's not what Trump
well,
said.
Yeah, that was my joke.
But
yeah.
Right. Some people are going to get that kind of, you know, oh, he just wants to. But we've seen this already so many times these last couple of weeks. If you think his end goal is to actually, you know, and maybe it is, maybe if all things went the way Trump wanted, the U.S. would gain full control of that area and start installing U.S. military bases, let other people live there and give them jobs, I guess. And he didn't rule out, you know, Palestinians and Israelis coming back. But having that conversation really is kind of even moot, because I think the whole plan for Trump is to escalate things to the point where Netanyahu even is like, whoa, easy. I think the best theory that I've seen on this is, and remember, I don't think Netanyahu, when the whole 2020, 2021 thing was going down, I don't think he was as solid in Trump's corner as Trump wanted him to be.
Right.
I think that caused some friction.
Trump seems to remember things like that.
And Trump's been short with Netanyahu before. He's been critical of him before, certainly. And he's also praised him. And, you know, he's moved the U.S. embassy. Israel is very, very important to Trump, obviously. But I think this was a move from Trump yesterday to go, hey, BB, you think that, you know, you're going to just keep bombing this place until you're able to annex it, and then all the rest of the Middle East is going to be coming after you, and this will never end, and blah, 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 blah. What if Trump goes, all right, what I'm going to do is escalate? And if the Middle East can't come to an agreement and can't figure this out, then we're just going to take it. I don't know. I think that will force them, at least to the negotiating table, much more quickly.
That's the word.
Yeah.
That's the word, negotiate. Again, we've seen it over and over again. This was, yeah, it was a stunning announcement, but at the same time, wasn't it the beginning of a negotiation? I think it was. Also, you know what this did too? I saw an analyst talk about this as well. It kind of, you know, Netanyahu's got this far right side of his party that is all for, we must destroy, we must win, we must obliterate, right? If there's nobody there, then wouldn't the war essentially be over? I mean, you can't fight a war when you're not fighting other people. Mm-hmm. And if you clear the people out, in a way, he can satisfy the right side of his country that is screaming for blood and say, look, the bloodshed is over because the people are gone.
Yeah, I think he one of the things he said was, I'm going to move them out of Gaza into nice places where they might not want to leave back for Gaza, and then rebuild Gaza, and give a bunch of folks over their jobs. It's kind of how he laid it out last night. I don't think Netanyahu was ready for that in the slightest.
And they just come out of a closed-door meeting that they were in there for a couple hours.
Amazing.
So, how about that? 850, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. Good to have you along.
852, who do you have for the big game Sunday night? Now, I'm not just talking about which team do you think is going to win. Which players do you think are going to show out on Sunday night in New Orleans? The best app for your big game party, it's actually on your phone, not on the table. It's called Underdog Fantasy, the Underdog Daily Fantasy app. With their Champions game, you could win up to 1,000 times your money just by choosing higher or lower on player stats like yards, touchdowns, interceptions, and a whole lot more. And you could do a lot Sunday night with the big game. Create several entries and then follow along on the Underdog Fantasy app. You know, the more players you add to your entry, the more money you might win. They've got all your favorite leagues, teams, and stars to choose from. So not just the NFL, but lots of college basketball, which is ongoing. NBA, NHL, PGA Tour, NASCAR, they've got it all. Underdog is the only champions platform that puts the power to cash out in your hands. Right now, you can either keep riding with your entry or tap the Win Now button and cash out whenever you'd like. And with the double flex option, you can even take two L's and turn them into a W. Underdog Fantasy, that's what you'll want to have open come Sunday night. For the big game, Underdog is the best place to play champions. To get started, download the app, Underdog Fantasy. Sign up with promo code Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N. Deposit now to get up to $1,000 in bonus cash instantly. It's promo code Dalton on the Underdog Fantasy app. You have to be 19 plus in our state of Alabama and present where Underdog operates, like Alabama. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit ncpgambling.org.
Fire Dog on the text line says there's a great Breitbart article about construction in Gaza. The bulldozing would take 5 to 8 years. How about that? Taking the time to map all those terror tunnels for foundation work, another 5 to 10 years. He's saying basically 20 to 25 years to rebuild in Gaza.
Let me be clear on this, too, because I wasn't. I was just saying what I think Trump is trying to do with this. Mm-hmm. I think that the U.S. Taking Gaza is not a good idea. It's not why I voted for Trump. It's not why I'm excited for Trump. It's not in the slightest anything that I want us taking part in.
Well, are we going to take Greenland? Are we just negotiating? Are we going to take the Panama Canal? Like, that's more. There's more to that, for
right.
sure.
Yeah, I think this
idea. This idea is, I would think it's simply just the beginning of a negotiating.
He is right about something, though. It's been going on forever.
Yeah.
And the way we try to stop it isn't stopping it. And, you know, whose job is it to stop it? Well, the United States has played a pretty major role in at least wanting to try to stop these things. But I don't know, with Trump, you know, you thought we were taking a step back into maybe not isolationist for sure, but carrot and the big stick approach, right? As we were talking about Teddy Roosevelt earlier. And he hasn't been using the carrot a whole lot. It seems he actually uses the carrot more with adversaries, with Iran. Yesterday, and he used the stick also, as he said, hey, if Iran assassinates me, good luck, because I've left instructions upon my death to demolish your entire country. And he said, really, any leader, that's what should happen if you assassinate anyone. But he also said, as he was signing this executive order, he's trying to do is rework a nuclear deal with Iran. But he said, I don't want to do this. I don't want to have to do this to you guys. And he was like acting like, I don't want to sign this. So you see it with, you know, Russia. You saw it with North Korea. With the bad guys, he tries to bring them to the table with a little bit of sugar. Come on. Yeah, I see your point of view. No one else sees your point of view. I think we can work it out. You have England or just the EU and all these other countries that are quote-unquote allies who have been taking advantage of us in many ways for many years.
He's kicking their butt.
And he's saying, look, things are changing.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating, and I've never seen anything like it.
Well, he wrote the book about it, right? The Art of the Deal. you're right. It's funny the way he treats people. And the other thing, like we were talking about, the fact that now he's got tech. I don't know if they're on his side necessarily. Not nearly as adversarial as it was in 2020. 20 for sure. I mean, you can't even compare the two eras or years. And he's just going at such breakneck speed. Think about all the notes he took down getting ready to suddenly run these. This is the spring game that we were all waiting on. Well, we're looking at this offense saying, wow, I didn't know they could do this. He obviously was preparing for these moments in time.
And Vance said they're not slowing down. J.D. Yep. Vance, vice president, said it's going to stay like this.
Andrew Sorrell, the state auditor, is going to be a guest of the Jeff Poor Show. Also, Joey Clark from up there in Montgomery on radio, and Dick Brubaker also in Montgomery. Jeff himself is at the State House today, correct?
That is right, and I can't wait to hear what he's got going on up there. Let's see here. Texter, did I hear they acquired the land to extend the Baldwin Express to 65? The commission has begun right-of-way acquisition, so that looks like that might be the next move. That is a big story, and one that this morning we haven't had enough time to spend on it, really, with everything that's going on. We'll spend a lot more time on that throughout the week and going forward. Michael said Chris Elliott is in the Pete Ream camp, which would be against Ivy's moves on the veteran board and everything here, and hasn't been on air without taking a shot at Meemaw's supreme power. Fiddler, on the other hand, is appropriately named, is what Michael says, and is just there to take up space and do the bidding of her puppet masters from Montgomery. Strong stuff there from Michael.
She's a freshman, right? I mean, I'm not that that excuses her necessarily, but that, I think that should be pointed out.
And, you know, yeah, Elliot, and I know he's gone round and round with Ivy, certainly. He's been on her bad list for some time.
Well, he doesn't get a chance to sit in the same plane when she's looking at hurricane damage in his district.
Let's see, T-Bone, I prefer Milton's cousin Kinky Friedman. Singer. Jason said, at one time, Democrats said they wanted change, but now that it's here, they seem scared to death.
That department that they're trying to really, 97% of them are voting Democrats.
USAID?
Yep.
Wow.
That's something to put in your pocket.
8:58, Jeff Poor Show on the way next. Mobile Morning's back tomorrow morning at 6:00.